And I think that particularly the branch, a lot of new branches work with money to the new branches, right?
It was before that, I became a city librarian in 1960, and these branches were all built by that time.
I mean, 53.
Yeah, I expect it was 53. I wouldn't remember, but it would be in that area. And I think we got into that a little bit. And it was an exciting time and wonderful. The city has really been very generous as far as establishing a good library system. Right now we're seeing it melt away in many ways, but the background is all there. And the branch network, which was completed before we started the main library, not through any choice of ours, but because that was the decision of the people as it were. And also, it's quite interesting, it seems to me, that this election was possible because the city anticipated, was getting and anticipated up on Giles money, which would eventually pay for all of this.
Okay, so in 1953 the voters were generous and they approved a sort of decentralizing that for the library system. And then in 1954, I guess that was the first, was that the first time that the idea of a new main library was put before the people? That was the election when they were going to move the whole civic center to Bustino.
Yes.
And a new library was going to be part of that.
No, it really wasn't. A new library was needed even when Theodore Brewitt was the city librarian, and I believe she retired in 1950. So that, and there was an election someplace along there. That part is rather hazy in my mind. There wasn't any choice about it. Wasn't our choice to do one and then the other. They were both needed and they both knew and they were a complete whole, as it were, if this is the way things worked out.
What did you think about the idea of moving the civic center and the new library to
Bustino? Well, I never approved of it, and I don't think that most of the people who were working for the library did. Practically none of them did. In the first place, if you get out to Big St. Noel's, you get pretty close to Signal Hill. You know how the boundary lines are out there, so what do? Build a library for Signal Hill. And in the second place, it seemed then, as to me it seems now, that the city needs a central core and that that central core has grown in a logical way. It's in the right place. It has been, of course, splintered and weakened at the time, but we need that strength. And it also seems to me that at that time and now, the indication is that the public transportation system, that is the center for it, and I felt that a public library needed to be down there with it. So I'm, even though there are many negative factors right now, of course, people are afraid to go down that area at night and so forth, but I maybe I'm just stubborn, but I think it's time to tell that it needs to be there. It's a good place for it.
So, but even after that was failed to be approved, the vote in 1956, the voters approved for new branches.
Mm-hmm.
Of money to construct.
Mm-hmm.
So there was still support for
libraries.
Well, for libraries near people's homes,
right? Yes. Just so they could understand, and also you see the fact that it was not to be a bond issue. Help.
But there was still, apparently, the recognition of the fact that a new main library was needed, because in 1960, there was another election.
A very hot election, a very hard election, and one that it should never have been, because some of the city leaders, Telegram and Buffins are primarily involved, decided that the library should be in the center of the city, which we all agreed, but that the city should buy the old Wise building, which perhaps you don't even remember, in the at the corner of Broadway and Pine, wasn't it? And rebuild that into a library. And we in the library and a great many the community people who were very library-minded knew that that would be just after a disaster. There were many physical problems that we felt in the first place we hadn't been solved, like the tensile strength of the building or of the redone building, and there seemed to be indications that perhaps part of that building would be taken over for something else, and we got it built. Grew into political lines that, well, we saw politics at a very negative stand, and some people who, the Press Telegram, for example, and had such a big leadership role, and other people in that group fought us hard. At one time, we were threatened with a lawsuit because of something we did that they felt we shouldn't do. When it came time to establish leadership for our campaign, the attorney who logically would have been the number one leader, and I'm sorry I didn't call him, I couldn't use his name because it's a wonderful story, I think, felt that he couldn't continue being our chairman because he was getting his father's practice so involved in that so many of his father's clients were on the other side wanting this makeshift for a library. And that threatened to remove a patronage and so forth. And the wonderful part of this story is that in a couple of weeks he was back working harder than ever. His father asked him how it happened, but he wasn't, and he explained it to him, and his father said, "You go out there and do what is right. We'll take care of the other and the way it comes along." We got Leo Vanderlance was one of our chairmen, and Don Gill, the co-chairman. And Leo Vanderlance had been very active in fluoridation campaigns. Don Gill, of course, is very community-minded and has been in many things. And I took business at Castagna when he asked Leo Vanderlance to come over for an interview and explained all of the problems involved. And while we were talking to him, at Castagna's phone rang, and it was somebody, a prominent citizen, who informed him that their group was going to start a lawsuit if we didn't change some of our campaign techniques. And Mr. Castagna said to Leo, "You see what I mean?" He'd already explained to him that this was he didn't want him to help us under false pretenses that this was going to be free. And Leo hesitated, and Mr. Castagna said, "I'm asking you to do anything if you feel professionally you shouldn't do or personally." And he said, "Oh, I'm not thinking of that at all. I'm very anxious to do it. I'm just trying to decide whether I have enough time to just do it." But we had wonderful people working with us and for us. one of the women who was on our first committee, she's got in a little basement, that little old library, said after the meeting, well, I assume politics at its worst. I heard these stories, but I didn't believe they were true. So there are a lot of things that have happened that are very colorful and important. And we lost in that we didn't get a new library building at that time, but we won in that this thing that was so dreadful didn't really materialize. And we realized as the campaign went on, and there's a good deal to talk later, that they'd really gotten in deeper than they would have wanted to had they anticipated in the beginning, but they were really going to the community and the very. And then, of course, after that, there were two bond elections, and we were really horrified that we lost. But in California, you know, there has to be a two-thirds majority, which means really that the minority makes the decision. And a two-thirds majority is pretty hard to get in anything. And then the council did a really courageous thing. They took the things into their own hands, and for the library and the city hall created a lease purchase plan. And passed it. They did that, of course, with a great deal of support from citizens groups. And by that time, there was a strong Friends of the Library group in Long Beach. So that's, in essence, sort of the story of how eventually we happened to have a really a beautiful and most functional building down the core of the city.
One of the questions that came to mind when you were talking about the Wise Building, 1960 election, did the Friends of the Library exist then?
No. The Friends of the Library came into existence during the censorship period, and that's just an exciting thing, too. I wanted a Friends of the Library group because I realized the strength it could have in our building program. And I threw out feelers every so often, which were never picked up, maybe because of the way I did it. My own feeling was that I could start a group anytime I wanted to. There would be people who would understand and be willing to spearhead it. But I wanted a group that came from the people, because I felt we needed that kind of strength. So we waited and had a real good censorship period in our history, which created that.
Were there censorship problems? Did people try to censor the library when you were assistant librarian? Or
always, and I suppose in every library there is a, somebody sees a word in a book they don't like, and so they're horrified, or some group decides that a book is too frank. Just before all of this started, a man went to the city hall and complained because he had books on communism in the library. And they never amounted to anything, and the logical answers were enough. But the censorship problem of that was established by the extreme right was a planned, concerted thing that didn't only exist in Long Beach. It existed in other places too, and this happened to be one of the key places, much to my surprise.
How did you first find out that you were on the target?
Well, I knew that this was because they began with a book, The Last Temptation of Christ, which is a classic. And I knew that a group, and of course at that time they weren't identified, or some people were going to present to the city council the fact that this book should be closing libraries. Except I thought nothing about it because in my mind the council had done what it always did and say, stuff to the librarian and that would be it. And I came to work and one morning at 8 o'clock, the Independent was out, of course, announcing that the council had taken a very different stand and that this was a very, very hot subject and that there had been a request that this would be pulled from our shelves. And then the drama began, and it's most interesting. What do you do? And one of the first things that flashed in my mind was, I know this community. I've talked to this community so much about libraries and a new building, but I never really talked about Francis yet. Do people really understand what this is and what we are up against? Have I really failed in some ways? Well, at 5 minutes after 8, the answer began coming and my phone began ringing. And with people protesting, they'd seen this in the paper, and were protesting. The first person I got was a woman who spoke very broken English, and she said, I have just received my citizenship papers. I am a citizen, and I know already that nobody else has a right to tell me what I should read. Another woman was a Catholic, and a Jesuit priest had suggested to her that she read this book, although this was on the index at that time. And Bass librarians, of course, I knew the whole staff would be involved in this, and I must give them leadership and strength, and explain to them what had happened. And there was a grand warning for this because the Bass librarians were having one of their 2 monthly bank meetings, and my thought was I must go down there immediately. I couldn't go for 2 hours because I was answering the phone, people who were calling and protesting. And I can remember one of the switchboard operators a week later saying, I feel so sorry for you. I just hate to ring you again. And of course we went to the council and fought for that book. And that is where the Friends of the Library started that morning. Of course, every chair in the council chambers was filled. And as I looked out from behind the rail, I could see this big mass of people. One of the encouraging and I think wonderful things was that soon after it started, the door opened and in walked a group of clergymen. The Council of Churches that had a meeting that morning and came with a resolution defending the library's position. These men were good friends of mine and helped me do that, and we worked together with many city problems, but it's indicative of the kinds of strength that the library got. And after that morning, a little group of women, I think there were 5, all quite young women, followed me back to the library. Some of them had known each other, but 1 or 2 of them had met the other 3 that morning for the first time. They've already become friends. And they said, we're going to form a group in this city so that if this ever happens again, we will be there. And this is what they did. This is how the Friends of the Library started, with a joint purpose of attaining a new building and of fighting censorship. And of course, the real battle came somewhat later when we had a 5-hour session. But they were there, and all during that, they gave me wonderful support. But I think that I happened to be the eye in the hurricane, as it were. But it's this community that deserves any credit. But they found wholesome, mature community, and they came to the forefront of many, many people, and I could sit here for 2 hours and name names of people that gave a great deal. This was true. We also got great strength from the Press Telegram, and of course, this isn't surprising in a way, in that if a library is attacked, are the papers going to be next? But they gave a very mature, sound kind of support. A couple of days after this had happened, I came back to the library, and there were 5 different reporters in the Press Telegram writing, doing research on this problem of censorship. And I said, gee, wouldn't one of you settle for an article on how much you need in the main library? And one of them looked up and said, you just don't know when you're ahead. And at the very base of this, there is a city manager who stood firm and strong for the library all through this, even at the expense of his job. John Mansfeld's policy was to carry the responsibility of appearing at the city council for all departments. He had just finished a very hard fight for the police department, and went away from his vacation the same burst. You know, it's a quiet library that one would expect not to have problems. And I worked closely with Jack O'Neill in manager's office, and went to him and said, I want to demand the right to defend this book in council. And he said, no, when John comes back, we'll talk it over. And so then John Mansfeld got back. I made an appointment right away and went over and told him. I said, I'm the one who's responsible for the book collection of this library system. You are not. And I am the one that must go before the council to defend it. And at first he said no. He said, Bryce, you just don't know what you're getting into. It can be a vicious thing. I don't want to see you go through all that. And eventually, of course, he said yes, and said, but remember, I'm not behind you. And he was every step of the way. There were some times that we had intense fights that nobody knew about, that is, the general public didn't. But this group was very active in a negative way in the council chambers in general. It was really rather interesting because no matter what happened, they weren't pleased. They wanted to censor many books, many authors. One of the things they wanted to do was take out all the records, to keep Sidhu's records. And well, they thought that it was, they thought that, it was, a book that was not fit to be on the shelves of the library of a God-fearing community. they use the word God-fearing. This group that I never would label, I felt this was not my place and it was not wise. I was always very careful not to get caught on the living room, as it were. But the Pastel Gran at this time carried a long article that identified the group as the John Birch Society.
Okay, I guess what I'm trying to get at is they objected to the last
temptation
of Christ because on religious grounds,
actually. Yeah.
But they objected to some of the other things on political grounds.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they seem to have a very, well, they had a very interesting, I'm not quite sure how they got to all of their definitions. They were against Pete Seeger because, of course, he had been called a communist and had been to Russia. One of the things they tried to get us to not to buy was the American Way of Death by Jessica Mitford because she was a communist and they felt that her royalties would go to Russia to help Russia. It was a strange kind of a pattern, and on the other hand, they, and right, this is a positive thing, they insisted that we must have the Turing, let's say, on their side. And they were always condemning us because we didn't have enough of copies of some book, maybe that we'd had for quite a while, but nobody ever bothered to read it, so then what you do, you buy 10 more. At that time, there were a good many publications that came out, or some publications that came out from the John Birch Society under various names, and one of them listed, there was a long list of books that, and they said that in a middle-sized library, they would feel that the library was balanced if it had X percent of this list, and we had far more than X percent of the list because, this was before the problem came up, because of course it's a public library must ride the whole gamut, as it were, and represent all sides. So I guess maybe that answers your question.
Okay, you settled the problem about the last temptation of Christ.
Yes, we kept it. It was not removed.
But then, wasn't there a larger problem that came up?
Or? Yes, well, this was the larger problem was that not only there were many things that they felt that should be pulled, But there were also, they blamed us for not having certain types of books. This was unfair because we did have them. So that it was a general indictment against the library collection in general and against me, let's say, and that I was responsible for that collection. But we had people from both City College and State University. We don't really have time to go into all of the people who supported us and came to our rescue. It was a wonderful group.
Okay.
And I'd like to, before we get too far from John Mansell, I would like to give one other illustration, which I think indicates the bias of these people and their inability to see the whole, but also it indicates what John was like. When it came time for us to renew our magazine periodical subscription, the council had been so deluged and influenced by this group, the leaders in this group, that they were demanding of John Mansell that he demand that we, that they chose us to do. I was supposed to be in the East for the library at the annual American Library Association conference, and was supposed to be on a national network of censorship, and I got word from them that I mustn't go, and stay here, and I must be at my desk in the council meeting. I was not called, but people who were there, including Peggy Hartwell, who was the city clerk at that time, said that she had never seen John Mansell so mad. She had never seen him put up such a fine fight for something that he believed in. And even so, he was almost overpassed by the council decision, so that finally John said to the mayor, "I will not give this command, but the council, if it is done, the council, it will have to come from the view from the city council." And they didn't quite dare. They backed down and weren't willing to show to take that time. But it was an indication of our city manager's strength and protection of the whole community and of the library. I can remember other times in which he'd say to me when we were going into council for something, "Now, Blanche, you remember, if I walk out, you must follow me." Well, of course, what he was saying is, if I walk out, I will be resigning, and you must resign, too. I never argued it out with him because I felt that time had held, but, you know, a librarian must not resign. He or she must sit right there and be fired. Then you have a case. But we got good support in the city hall, and they were very fair also to the other side. Sometimes I felt a bit but this wasn't really true. They handled themselves in a very fine way.
I guess what I'm not clear about is how this sort of expanded or accelerated from
one book.
From one book to apparently what was a wide range of criticisms of the library.
It did, because this was an organized thing. A group, determined that they would attack libraries. And this is understandable considering their ideology, and that they would attack libraries through this book and through censorship in general. It got very heated and very personal, not only in Long Beach, but in some other cities in Southern California. So that we were always having certain people, and I won't mention their names because it's past, indicting the library for something, indicting a branch librarian for something that maybe he had found in our vertical file. So that it was a constant heated turmoil. With a great deal of hate. I'll never forget the expression on some of these people's faces. Let's turn it off.
You fought against censorship in the city council, but what are the arenas?
The most important arena was the Book Selection Committee. At that time, Long Beach had a unique kind of structure in that we had what was called the Book Selection Committee. Three citizens appointed by the city manager to to meet with the librarian and to approve the book order. This had existed from the time that probably a little group of women got together and did the book order for a little mm-hmm. library. And it had some delightful results, and that these are all the people that was interesting to meet with, and people that were key people, so that one enjoyed passing on to them the general problems. And obviously, a group of women can't come into the library and really evaluate very deeply our and this is understood, just as a city librarian does not select every book on the list. She delegates and so forth. This group, they have a call themselves an education committee volunteer. And this group decided that they wanted to have representation at the book committee. And of course, this was quite all right. Under the Brown Act, they had every right to. It rather surprised me at first because I didn't know the implications of it. And I wondered a bit if they wanted to bother. But their plan very soon became quite apparent in that the people who came to criticize selections on the book list for the month. I remember this is the way they criticized The Last Temptation of Christ. I mean, The American Way of Death. And they criticized a couple of books that we were getting on homosexuality, and so forth. This got to be very hot, very tense, and because they really came to create problems, and as I sat there with the book committee, the problems of course would be hurled at me. I said I had to juggle someone along. And about the time that I felt it had gotten so bad, I just wondered what to do next. Somebody in the Friends of the Library group heard about it, and things began to happen. I suppose, looking back on it, that I should have called the president of this group immediately and asked for help, but it's just not sort of used to doing that kind of thing. So we began having bigger meetings, people on the other side, professors, League of Women Voters, people, attorneys, leaders in the community, and there were always a group there to listen, to balance, to discuss. And these groups got bigger and bigger until I wondered, what do I do? Do I keep on trying to have them in this office of mine, or do we move downstairs where there's more room? And I felt that it was better to stay where we were possible, and so we did. But just before the 5-hour hearing, we had the Time Travel Book Committee meeting, and a professor from City College, two other men, plus other people, but one of the leaders of the, what I call the opposition, same night, the man who had really was their leader, made some comment, and one of the people who was supporting me answered him, and the man said, "You're not on the book committee, what business do you have here anyhow? And the professor said, in no uncertain terms, I'll tell you what business I have here. I'm here because you are here, and just as long as any member of your group comes to these book committee meetings, I will be here, and others. And I said, I've never had any more attendance. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Maybe.
How did the $5 meeting for the city council come about?
They demanded it. This group demanded that there be a public hearing regarding the, let's call it in quotes, the atrocities of the library, which was a public hearing in which the city librarian, of course, was on the carpet. One most interesting thing about that meeting, the leaders of the group that were opposing us, first up in the first row, and there were papers that they read, I guess maybe five altogether. And then people spoke on both sides, fine speeches. I was proud of my community that day. When I came in earlier, before it had started, reporter, Sherman Williams, who had been most interested in this whole thing and a wonderful supporter of the library, said to me, there's a Minuteman here. And it was obvious that the Minuteman was there to talk. During the first part of the meeting, John Mansell reached over the table to Bob Crow and said, Bob, this is something for you to take care of at the proper time. And what it really was a report from the police department on this Minuteman, because when he was identified, they immediately sent an SOS to the police department, and here came the report back. Well, the meeting went on, and this man did not get up to speak. And Sherm told me later that he realized that as long as he was in the room, he wouldn't. And so he left. Sherm left, and the man got up to speak. And it just made a wonderful defense of this group and the wonderful patriotism of the group and the thing that they were doing that was so important for the community. And looking at these faces, to see these people, you know, getting more and more proud and, gee, we have it now. We've won it. So when they got all through, Bob Crow said, just a minute, I cut his hands last night for St. George. I have some questions to ask you. Are you not so-and-so? And, yes, I am. Were you not arrested? And I gave a date for having arms in your possession. Well, yes, he was. But then he defended it. Were you not involved in sending machine guns to Russia, I think it was, several years ago? Maybe I have these questions somewhat twisted, but the idea is the same, is that the questions that were asked absolutely put him right in his place. He was, and you could see the expression on these people in the first row, you know, from being so inflated, just going down to nothing. And this machine gun that he had sold, he said, yes, he had, but it was only a little machine gun. But that sort of indicates the heat of the whole thing. Also, in relation to this, he asked about the scope. For quite a while, someplace in Florida, this group had a radio program. And if you dialed a certain number, you got, how did that work? It seems as though if you dialed a certain number on your phone,